Okay, sorry. How are you doing?
Some results.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
So, I'm hopefully I have time to show you the whole process.
Okay.
Right. Here is representation of what has to be done, right? That's the diagram. First,
okay.
We need to construct the listing of the initial file system.
Yes.
And then we need to have the traces, right?
Yes.
Pass that into RC.
Yeah.
So first, I'm going to generate those two.
Okay.
Right, so currently, I have shortened version of the Dirch files.
Okay.
Basically, for the Dirch files, there's four chords, so there's four files. I just grabbed the first 100 lines of each, and I put them to their respective files.
Okay.
Just to have a simple example.
Okay, great.
So what I've been writing is this transform script. It takes all the files you give it, and you tell it what to generate. T is for transforming the traces, and I is for generating the initial file system.
Okay, so you're saying both.
Yeah. Normally it takes a little bit longer, but since there's only 100 files each, 100 lines each, it's done. So, here we have initial file system. And we have the traces.
And it's in a trace format.
Yes, that's what they use to generate.
Okay.
So now we got these two, right? Now we need to pass it to the RT compiler.
Okay.
So now from that they generate C files, so then we compile, and then we pass it to the RT replayer. So that's what it looks like to generate this, the RT script. So that's where you gotta pass it, the traces, the initial file system, and then you gotta give it a destination for them to be able to place their generated C files.
Okay.
So they spit out a bunch of output all the way to the top. So I'm not gonna get too much into the warnings, but these are, for example, a read that was done on inode, which the file descriptor wasn't previously opened on, right? So on like a mysterious origin, they call it. I can fix that later. Okay.
Yeah, I see.
Now we have, that's all they generated, right? And they provide us with the make file.
So they create one C file for every thread that they create.
Every thread that was in the trace. That was make, reads it, and now it output the shared library, which is exactly what the player needs.
Okay.
So we've gone from there up to here, and this is what we have with bench.so. Now we gotta call the replayer. So for the actual replayer, I just give it the shared the path to the shared object file, and I gotta give it a temporary directory where they will set up the actual initial file system. And here I'm just putting the standard out and standard error into a file so I can read it after it's done. So it ran.
So the replayer just ran.
Yes. Okay. So all these warnings, that's from the standard error.
Okay.
Okay. Simple. Okay. So the warnings were from a read that was done on a file descriptor.
That wasn't open.
It was. It's just that what was requested was more than was able to be retrieved from the file. So let me show you the actual.
Oh, so they did open the.
Yeah. Everything's running fine in that case.
Although it's a read from a file that was not opened in a trace.
Right.
They did open it.
But everything they opened it. It's just a read. The read tried to consume more than what was actually in the file. So what they got back isn't what they expected. So that, all right, for example, this first one, the read on 16, right, this corresponds to this read right here.
Yeah.
You see the previous open, and then that was the read for for 4,096 bytes. If you go to the original trace, you see the same thing, right? There was an open made on that inode, which produced what I gave it. But then they made a read for 4,096 bytes on a file that's only 2,570 bytes large. Right? So the return value is for that read is 2,570. That's what they got. But I told them that to expect 4,096. Because from the beginning, I said, I'll just assume everything ran correctly, right? I can fix that up by seeing that the size of the file or the offset.
Will the read takes a maximum size, right? The read system call takes a maximum size that you want to read, but it would return only the amount that got read.
Yeah. So the only thing I know from the original trace is how much they asked for on the read. And what the offset of the file was.
And you assume that what they asked for is what they got.
Yeah. That was the simple case for now.
Sure. No, I completely understand. Now, before that, I was asking you another question, which is that in the trace, there is no open for this read. There is no previous open in the trace.
Yeah, no, actually, this one, there is. Yes.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, the first one.
But what about the other?
Others, from what I remember vaguely from reading their code, I think they take that into account.
So they do open the file that
they might resolve the dependencies.
Oh.
But for now, I just wanted to get it working. But I will, every time I see something like that, I will put an open call in there from now on to be sure that it actually functions how it's supposed to.
But if they do the open for you, then.
Yeah, I'll be reading it.
It won't be necessary.
Yeah. I just need to verify. So as you see, the read was done for 4,096 bytes, but the size of the file was only 2,500. And, well, the next read on the same file, you see that the offset went from 0 to 2,570. So what was returned was indeed 2,570, right? This is the offset of the file at the time you placed the call to the read. So that's basically all the warnings out there. Those correspond to things like that, which I need to fix. Apart from that, these are all the results.
So the timing accuracy of this, is there any information about that? Is this a timing accurate replay or a full blast replay?
This is as fast as possible.
Oh, okay.
So as we see, successful events, 399. There was a total of 401 events. So these 18 are the warnings. Failed events are the warnings that you saw. There was actually 18 of them. So success rate, 95%. The elapsed time, which I assume is in seconds. I haven't really understood all the results they've given us.
Oh, it's great. I mean, getting to this point, it's not easy. So I'm glad you're able to. So when you say take each warning and understand the source for why that problem exists, and then fix your transform routine to appropriately.
Fix these warnings is easy. I just need to verify the size of the file and check if what you're trying to read is bigger than what it is, and then I'll just give what the minimum of those two values are. Right? That's pretty much.
Are all these warnings of the same kind?
Yes. All of these reads are the same thing.
Are the same
thing. As you see, okay, so it says returned, what actually returned, and what expected is here. So you see how that's what was expected because I told.
So you could fix that in 10 minutes at the end. And then everything would run. And then the next thing would be to go to larger sizes.
after I verify that it's working a little bit with less mistakes, I try to run down the full thing. It might take a while. So I haven't done that yet because I'm scared it'll take too long.
Yeah.
So, okay. So remember when we were talking about MMAP and the flags? Okay. I'm doing a little bit guessing based on the open flags. So as you see here, for this inode, these are the open flags.
That's okay.
All read only. Whenever I see all read only on an inode, I will assume that the flags for the mmap have to be map private and it's only protection read. Okay, so protection read, from what I from the manual page, is you're allowed to read what you mmap, yes?
No.
No. That's what it's
like. M protect means that you are doing. Protection read. Yes. So not M protect, right?
Right. Yeah. So that allows you to read the MI.
Yeah.
So whenever I see a read only, I assume that.
Yeah.
The map private. Because if I do a map shared on read only,
it'll bug out. It'll fail. Yeah, because you cannot. If you do shared, then that means.
Yes.
Well, actually, you could do shared.
I tried. It says no.
It says no.
It fails.
Oh.
Yeah. It says.
When you open read only, you cannot map shared.
So this is the error in access. So map share was requested and protection write is set, but the file descriptor is not open in a read write mode.
So share and protection write is set.
Yes.
But you can do map shared without protection write. And then it would be okay if the file descriptor is read only. That's what I was thinking. I mean, to me, it doesn't make sense that you're forced to do map private when you open read-only.
Yeah, I read wrong.
Yeah. Because you need both of these conditions to be true.
That's what was saving me. Because I was putting protection
right
on every...
Mm.
Until I fixed the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'll put in map shared for every problem.
Map shared is probably the more appropriate.
Does it slow down the call?
Map private?
Map shared. Compared to map private. Which one's slower?
Actually, because it's read-only, there would be no difference, I believe.
Okay.
Because map private only creates a copy if you're writing to the page.
Okay.
See, the difference between map shared and map private, right?
Yeah.
What you're doing is you're mapping the contents of a file,
mm-hmm.
which is actually present in the operating system's page cache,
okay.
into the application memory.
Mm-hmm.
So the application can directly access the OS memory.
Yeah.
Right, but if you have it map private and you write to that, you need to get a private copy, and that comes into the application memory. It doesn't stay in OS memory anymore.
Copy and write.
And it's a copy and write.
Okay, so map shared is the pop map shared.
Yeah, should work.
So the other. Now the protections: protect read, protect write. I know how to set those depending on the flags of the open.
Mm-hmm.
But what about protect execute?
In our case, it shouldn't matter.
Okay. So do I leave it off or do I put it?
It shouldn't matter because we are not going to execute instructions on the page that we have. I mean, we don't have the application.
Right.
We only have system call traces.
Yes. Okay. So I just leave it off.
Yeah, you can just leave it out and it doesn't have any effect.
So, one assumption I made on the open call is that it will always have one of the three flags, all read only, all read write, or all write. Is that correct?
Yes.
On every open call?
Yeah, I would say just go with all read write.
Yeah.
It's probably the safest.
Yeah, because I can detect the all read write flag and I can detect the all all write only flag.
From the traces?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, from our traces. Right?
Yeah, from our traces we have.
Because of the integer value. But an all read only flag is a zero bit value. So when I AND it with the original, if you AND something with zero, it's going to return back zero, right?
No, but if you OR it with zero.
Well,
if you OR it with zero, you get exactly what you need, right?
The way I'm doing it, yes. It doesn't. I AND it to make sure that it's there. Because the flags are, I believe, separated by... So we have a 32-bit integer, right? And the flags correspond to each bit, no?
Yeah.
Right? So that's why I AND it. If I AND the protection... all rewrite with the original flags, it'll return back a value. It won't return back zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I AND the same thing with the all read, all write only, it'll do the same thing. It'll give me back a value, not zero. And that's how I detect that, yes. We do have those flags.
But to detect or read only, you have to OR it with zero.
Right. So by default, I default to it. If I didn't find Oh, right.
Or you could add it with one, like complement of read only.
But one is for write only, I believe.
You could complement the read only flags and add it with the original flags. And if you get back a 0, then you have read only. If you get back a 1, then it's read write.
It's because the value of read only will be 0.
Yes.
So if I complement it, it'll be what? All ones? And yes. A zero at the end?
So read only is zero at the least significant position?
Everything's zero. Yeah. So imagine a 32-bit value. It's all zeros.
It's all zeros, yes. Right? If you do a complement of that and AND it, so all ones,
mm-hmm.
and we do a bitwise AND, and you get back all zeros, then you know it's read only. Make sense?
It's because
it's just that, I mean, depending on what flag, whether you're trying to figure out whether something is 0 or 1, you have to
use either bitwise AND or OR. So this is the code I'm using. So it's like, okay. So this, you give it the flag value, which is an integer, and don't worry about this. Okay. So I go through the values here, and I end it with what the flag value was given with with what's in my table.
Yeah.
Yes. So if it does come up, then I'll append that to a flags list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now that's checking just the general flags. If you see here, so that's to check. So that for loop was to check these, right? I put these apart to do them separately. These are the open modes. So read only defaults to 0, write only defaults to 1, and read write defaults to 2.
Yeah. Okay.
So after I did the for loop, that was for the other values. Now I do for that particular flag.
Yeah.
So I AND the flag value,
which
was an integer, with
read-write,
which was a 2.
Yes.
If that returns back a value, then that means that, yes, the flag was set.
Yes.
So I put it in my flags.
And this is fine. I think what you have is fine because one of those three need to be specified.
Okay, that was my concern.
We were talking too long for no reason.
Yeah. So if I didn't find any of the other two, then I default to read only.
Yeah.
So assume that it has to be there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was. I needed to reason about that. Alright, so.
And you have checked that you have those other flags also show up, right?
Yes. Yes. Not on this one because only 400 total lines, but in a bigger one, they won't show up.
Yeah. Okay. Because so if they don't show up at all, then I will concern about the method.
Yeah. Every open has one of those three flags.
Yeah. That's good. That's really good. Awesome work. We weren't expecting it to be done so quickly.
It's 7 months, right?
Yeah.
Let go 1 week over. So.
Yeah.
I still need to fix something. Just
By the way, you're entering hours, right?
Yeah, starting to.
Okay. When did you start?
I put my hours for last week.
Okay. All right. So... Yeah, please be consistent with entering your hours.
Yes.
Because then that is makes my life easier.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was also I do have a little weird bug because of the open and reads. If there was no open on a particular inode, but there was a read, that's a mysterious father script, yes. I do have a bug there. So imagine there's a read on a mysterious file descriptor, yes? And right after that, there was a close. on that same file descriptor. But then after that, there was another read on another mysterious file descriptor.
Oh.
What I do is I return back the previous file descriptor given to that other mysterious file descriptor, the other mysterious inode, back to the pool, by access of obtaining file descriptors for that particular inode.
Okay.
So it'll look like read on 3, close on 3, read on 3. That would be a bug in a real program, right?
Yeah.
I need to fix that bug. That's because...
That's because you are opening only when you have to, instead of opening all at once in the beginning.
Every time I see a read on an inode which wasn't previously opened,
insert an open.
Yes, I grab a file descriptor from the pool and I give it to that guy, so that RTC doesn't complain about missing file descriptors.
Do you insert an open as well?
No, not yet. That's what I'm saying. I could go that route, but like I was saying, maybe RTC already takes care of that. But it would be easier for me to just insert the open, so I don't have to worry about that problem I just said right now. A read on 3, close on 3, then a read on 3. But that last read on 3, that 3 pertains to a different inode from the previous read.
I would say because you have to specify the file descriptor, that makes it difficult, because you may not be consistent with what RTC inserted, if it did insert on its own. Right?
Right.
So I think it'll be more consistent if you did all the opens to files that have operations without an open in the beginning of the trace.
In the beginning?
It's
easier to just put it right before. Because I do it, just in time. I read one of our origin traces and I transform it and place it in the file directly. So I do that consistently.
So insert and open right before
the right before the access to the mysterious.
The advantage is that you use fewer open file descriptors at any given time because there is an upper limit on.
And also, if you're looking at the trace to verify any bugs, you could see those two together.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing all the way at the top.
Yeah. The only thing is, I don't know how you would eliminate the bug that you just described.
Well, no, if I do place an open call, then RC should assume, okay, this is an open on a new file, which gave back a file descriptor 3. So this file descriptor doesn't pertain to the same file descriptor as before.
Yeah.
Because it's a new open, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm...
The only thing is that, the only problem with that is that you're perturbing the trace by inserting opens right in between.
Although in the original system, that was happening, but it wasn't recorded, right?
No.
That open wasn't recorded.
No. That open did not get recorded because it happened before the trace collector.
It's not taken into account the total time, right?
It's not taken into account in the total time. So what we could do is to have a pre-loading phase. So the replayer, if you modify RTC so that before you have, or rather the operations only get accounted for after the initial opens have taken place.
Yeah. I might take a look into how they handle a mysterious file descriptor,
because
they might do that already.
Yeah, they might do that already.
So, yeah, I'll look into that.
That might be the... Yeah.
See how they do that.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Umberto.
See you.
Take care.